such sights to show you.
She knows. No, she knows. I can hear her little, her chain going, and yeah, she gets it.
You little bitch.
Yeah, you know what you should do to subdue her, or maybe make her more aggressive, is just rock some killer 50s tunes.
So many.
That would do it. I think
so
that would do it.
So many killer 50s tunes.
Like, yeah, killer 50s tunes,
oh,
yes.
Oh, no!
I did it.
I made it. Oh, no. It's an accidental pun.
Oh, no. See, this is the worst of the puns. You're like, ah.
The ones where you're like, fuck. I didn't mean to be funny. I didn't mean to be God's gift to humor.
Ugh. Now people gotta assess it without me preparing for it. Oy.
Damn it.
Well, we're already here. Would you like to...
Do you want to just go ahead and dive right in?
Yup, let's go.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
I already see a typo in the outline.
Yeah. I saw it too.
I copied and pasted Wikipedia. This is bullshit on that one. This is one line, you...
Yeah, no.
Hi, everybody.
Happy to be here.
It's 2022.
No, second week of January. Happy to be here. We are still recording remote because the situation has only gotten worse.
Yeah, see, it's not actually January for us. It is we are in December.
Yeah.
But oh boy, has... remember how a couple weeks ago we were talking about all these great plans, all these classes, blah, 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 blah. Well... Omicron hit good old Los Angeles, and it is a rough time.
It is a bit of a time for sure. So
yes.
We are on Struggle Street as it is.
Oh, I like that. That was good.
Yeah, I didn't come up with that. I can't claim it, but Struggle Street is definitely the name of the game right now. So we are continuing to record remote just to keep everyone safe, and even though we're seeing each other this weekend, but stay lovey.
Yeah, with other people, it's great. Yeah.
in an enclosed space for an extended period of time. It's fine.
And ruining our own immune system. We're actually severely damaging it with alcohol.
No, I can't.
Oh, that's right. Well, I'll be doing it,
I'll just get super, super baked.
There you go.
I think what Gandalf would want.
Exactly.
We're watching Lord of the Rings.
We're watching. Yeah, I'm like, I know the reference, but
yeah, no, we're watching Lord of the Rings for everyone listening at home.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this will be way, way past. So who knows? By the time this episode comes out, I could be facing the ramifications of this very outing.
Exactly, but you know what? 4K Fellowship of the Ring, kind of worth seeing.
Worth Omicron?
No. worth Omicron risk.
Yes. Well, yes. Also, like, I I'm really happy that your friends are vaccinated, so I feel much better.
Yes. Yeah. We are a responsible bunch of burnout bros, so it's great.
Yeah. A bunch of responsible delinquents. So.
Yes, there you go.
Let's go ahead and jump right in, because there's some responsibility and there's some delinquency in this movie.
Yes.
Not at the same time, though.
No. Clearly very different character-wise.
Yeah, no. We are talking about Christine from 1983. Oh, I found the other typo, because there's two typos in, like, the first, like, page.
Oh, great. Well, this is fun. This is Christine, and good old IMDb has a... another apt gold synopsis for us. So, a nerdish boy buys a strange car with an evil mind of its own, and his nature starts to change to reflect it. Oh boy. Yeah. Well, I mean that's kind of it.
That's it. The movie.
That's it. Yeah. There's this. It's a pretty simple premise, to be honest with you.
It's like, such a cool premise, though.
Yeah, you know what? You get Carpenter and... Oh, yes, of course. Screenplay by Bill Phillips. And again, Carpenter, directed by... Mr. John Carpenter, the goddamn legend, based on... again, I copied and pasted this from fucking Wikipedia, but whatever. Based on Christine, not Kristen, by Stephen King.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now, and it is spelled correctly. I don't think you can spell.
No, I literally copied and pasted. Maybe somebody...
I'm looking at it right now. Based on Christine by Stephen King. I'm looking
whatever.
At the Wikipedia article.
You know what? I probably fucking click somewhere and accidentally press backspace and yeah, how it goes. Anyways, this is starring Keith Gordon, John Stockwell, Alexandra Paul, Robert Prosky, and Harry Dean Stanton. So,
very weird random appearance by Harry Dean Stanton.
Very, very weird. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Now, this one was budgeted at a solid $10
million. In 1983 money?
In 1983 money, which is pretty good. Yeah. Released, of course, on December 9th, 1983. And again, we had a 1983 movie here earlier. This is the end, but this is like Return of the Jedi, Thriller, Dead Zone. This is a good year. This is a goddamn good year.
Yeah.
Oh, Scarface. And Scarface. Oh, boy, Scarface. and speaking of tremendous hits... This one grossed $21 million, so it more than doubled its budget by a little bit, and can be seen, of course, as a success.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
Yeah, way to go.
Woo! Okay, so let's go ahead and jump right in. As noted in any of our episodes set in the 80s featuring Stephen King, he pretty much kind of ruled horror at this point, or as Anthony said, kindra.
Yeah. I meant to put Kingdra because I was playing Pokemon and I wanted to evolve my horsey, so you know?
Obviously. Okay, yes. That makes sense. The author had already released landmark novels like Carrie, Salem's Lot, The Shining, and of course The Dead Zone, some of which included great film adaptations we've totally covered. Mm-hmm. Check those out.
Oh, yeah.
King also dabbled in a bit of screenwriting, adapting some of his own short stories and producing two original stories for the anthology film Creepshow, which was very, very successful, and I cannot wait to fucking cover it.
I'm surprised we haven't, but you know, we've been pretty heavy on the King this season.
I mean, last season, there's so much King content. We've covered... a lot of it.
A lot.
There's still so much more to go. I mean, we still have Cujo. We still have Creepshow.
Yeah, Lawnmower Man. Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, actually.
Dark Tower. I'm saying all the failures, but yes.
You are saying all the absolute.
There's an ebb and flow, and we have been on the upper end for the most of these, but we can hit the ground on a couple of these. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we haven't covered any of the recent adaptations of It, so you know there's that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so oh. we got some we did Cat's Eye, The Stand. We haven't covered The Stand,
man.
Thinner.
But we did do Cat's Eye. That's pretty good. Yeah, that's right. Oh boy. And another 80s too. Damn.
Yeah.
We'll get to 90s King eventually, guys. Don't worry.
Oh, man. What a shit show, huh?
Yeah.
riding high on success.
Yes, high on success.
High.
Super high on success.
Cocaine Steve. he had a lot of offers from Hollywood, as well as two incomplete manuscripts ripe for adaptation. Cujo, The Story of a Killer Dog, and Christine, Story of a Killer Car. Anthony cannot spell Christine.
Boy, why did it not give me the little spell check underline either? I don't get it.
Christian.
I don't get it.
Christian.
Christian. It's too late now. We don't. We
Christian.
It was a little buzz when I was writing this. It's good.
That makes sense then. So, yeah, Christine, Story of a Killer Car. Today, we are obviously talking about the car.
Yes.
Yay.
As by you clicking on this particular
and,
episode.
Yeah, you knew what you signed up for, so buckle in. No pun intended.
It's totally intended. What's wrong with you?
he gave first dibs of this work to a producer named Richard Kobritz, who quickly snatched up Christine, calling it a celebration of America's obsession with the motor car. The motor car.
yes, the motor automobile.
The automobile.
Fueled by gasoline.
Or diesel.
Diesel.
Leaded. Thankfully, Kobritz's first choice to direct was totally free. The legendary John Carpenter. They're like, oh, let's see if he's available. He's free.
Yep. She said yes, that was very fast. No.
So it took a little while to get him. He had two major projects in the works until the release of his passion project, The Thing. It bombed at the box office and nearly ruined his career. Please listen to our episode on The Thing for more on that.
Season one finale. Whee!
We do need to apparently revisit our thing, The Thing, I think stance, because I think we were a little bit harsh on it.
Oh, wow.
I think okay. I need to re-listen to it, but we were, I think, harsh, and I'm sorry, because it's one of my favorite movies now.
Yeah, this keeps happening to us. It happens when you talk about horror films and watch one every week for like 4 years.
It's
you know?
True. You become jaded and harsh, or in my case, if you've never seen any of these horror films, and you're like, I'm going to be a bitch about it.
Then you're just like, man, that bitch was good.
Thankfully, a Stephen King adaptation was a near guaranteed moneymaker, and Carpenter could use a hit, seeing as this was the only offer he actually received after The Thing, which is very sad, but also kind of funny.
Yeah. He's like, oh boy, I guess I'll just go back to the factory, and oh, we got one. Oh, thank God.
Back to the car-making factory, I know. So after reading Christine, he said, it just wasn't very frightening, but it was something I needed to do at the time for my career, unquote. Which
okay.
Sounds like a, like just someone very passionate about their work.
I mean, you could always trust Carpenter to be honest as fuck.
It's true.
He really is. He's just like, yeah, it was shit, it's fine. You should watch it.
It was okay. He even got special effects supervisor Roy Arbogast on board, ensuring The Thing didn't tank his career either.
Nice. See? There he goes. Yeah. He's like, oh boy. Listen, I'm going to make up for that shit from earlier.
I like how he got the supervisor, even though Rob Bottin did a lot of the actual special effects.
Oh, yeah, but Botten's good. Yeah. I mean, nope. Yeah.
Botten, I don't think, was struggling for work after.
No. Carpenter's just like, hold on a second. I need somebody to help me get this done cheaply. So Botten, he's a bit of a diva. Let's get you are fine. Anyway, so Brooke Shields and Scott Baio were quickly considered by the studio as leads for the film. But the filmmakers turned their asses down and chose to go with relative unknowns for the lead roles, actually. So,
interesting.
Yeah, this is a creative decision. And they were just like, fuck it, if they're cheaper, go for it. However, they were open to Kevin Bacon, who had to opt out of a part as he was busy shooting something, I don't know, it's called Footloose? What? I don't know.
Never heard of it.
He was a little busy, just a little busy. The real star of the movie would actually be the car, which is a 57 Plymouth Fury in this particular film. In actuality, Christine was a 58 Fury and was also played by a Belvedere and a Savoy. So he managed to snag, Carpenter, of course, managed to snag a mix of 24 cars, each with varying degrees of, let's say, usability. But he had a Hollywood studio budget and didn't have to pay for Scott Baio or Brooke Shields. So he used that to repair 17 of these bitches and put them in the film for, you know, various Jeez. Things like stunts and, you know, yeah, close-ups and all
well,
this shit.
Let's see. There's like a whole sequence where one of them is just on fire.
Oh, my gosh. And then one's just going through a narrow alleyway all fucked up, which is a great visual, actually.
Oh, man.
In practical effects, that is insane. So he acquired the cars via a newspaper ad, actually, as, of course, the 80s were a different time, and you couldn't just Craigslist this bitch.
Newspaper ads. Just had mm-hmm. to open up a newspaper and look for people who in the 80s were selling some point in the 50s, a Plymouth Fury.
I would like to think, though, that we still have our boy producer there doing this in his, like, 1920s voice. He's like, ah, newspapers here, get you 50s automobiles.
Newspapers, read all about it.
Read about the Reagan Revolution. Oh, 80s. Anyways, they needed as many cars as they could get, seeing as Carpenter needed special effects supervisor Roy Arbogast to figure out how to film the car's regeneration scenes in 3 weeks.
Yes, I want to talk about this because as I was watching that, I was like, how did they do it? Anthony's going to tell me tomorrow, but I want to know how they did it.
They trusted everything they could to Roy Arbogast, who was basically a gun to the head. Be like, you need to get this done in 3 weeks because these are all cut. And he did his fucking magic because, again, he supervised the effects for the thing. He can figure it out. Yeah. So, yeah, Arbogast was our boy. Anyways, Carpenter worked on the score for the film as well and had free rein to use all of his favorite rock and roll songs from the 50s, which he fucking did. He loved it. He's a music guy. So, you know?
I mean, you can tell.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I love the mixture of 50s old school just jamming tunes and this 80s synthwave / very kingy horror just score under everything.
I like that you pegged it as kingy.
Yeah, it feels a little kingy to me. Okay. That's how I would say.
I think for me it was, and I mean I'm sure we can talk about it later, but the scene where Christine is like driving down the road, I think it's after, it's not when she's on fire. But there's this one scene where she's like driving down the road, and I'm talking about her like she's a person.
we're gonna in this play-by-play for sure.
There's just like this like very synthy, very 80s, and it struck me as very Season of the Witch, and I paused. I was like, "There's no way," and I like looked at it just now, and I was like, "I was right." Yeah.
Well, to me, it is totally Carpenter's take on King. I would say
for sure.
Like it's his kind of because I mean. Obviously, no one's going to do it as good as Carpenter. Stephen King movies in the 80s didn't have the best directors, I would say. They had some good ones, but they didn't have... This is the only one that had a fucking John Carpenter behind it. But of course, after 5 weeks, one blown-up gas station and a lot of blown-up 50s model Plymouths, Christine was ready to go. And again, Arbogast is the man. He just does this shit. Of course, Carpenter, however, was a little more cautious going into this particular premiere.
Yeah,
and for good reason.
The thing, I bet. Although, okay, so the regeneration thing for the car. I'm curious. I bet they just, like, filmed it and then played it, put it in reverse.
I would imagine so.
That's what it looked like as I was watching. But, oh, man, it's so cool.
If I remember, there was also some other things they did, too. So it wasn't just the reverse. I know that was actually part of it, too. I can't remember what the specifics were. It was in a making-of thing that I saw not that long ago. But it's just, what do you call it? Hollywood voodoo. It's just Hollywood voodoo. Like, these guys...
Magic.
I mean, they didn't have CG, really. Like, only George Lucas was using it. And he was like, here's a spaceship battle. Like, try to top this shit. And he's like, fuck,
we can't
top 24 shit. Cars.
Yeah. We have 24 cars and no CG. How can we ever top this shit? How can we ever top this, George Lucas? Ever?
And he's like, oh, you've been working on this for 3 years? I have 3 weeks. Oh, boy.
Anyway, let's go on to the release of this. So when the MPAA finally got their hands on Christine, they wanted to give it a PG rating, as PG-13 did not exist at the time. The filmmaker said, fuck that, and added a few F-bombs from the main characters they had filmed. I like that this is pretty much just the reverse of what the MPAA and filmmakers have done in the past, where they're just like, this is rated R, and they're like, I don't want it to be, or whatever, and they're just like, no, we need this to be rated R.
Yeah, it's a total subversion on how we normally tell this story, which is kind of hilarious, because, like, there's a lot of gruesome shit that happens in this movie, but they were just like, not enough for an R. Maybe kids can watch this.
I would say kids could watch it, because, like, aside from the language, it's not particularly graphic, for, like, some, like, very 50s titty grabbing.
Yeah, or the dick grab in the beginning.
There's a dick grab in the beginning, and then, again, some very 50s, like, making out in the car. Like, someone's getting a rug burn on their dick.
Yep, there's like, a good old blue moon. The whole shit's just going there. It is, yeah.
Like, other than that, like, and even then, you don't even see titty.
You know what? It would make a great PG-13 movie, for sure.
It's a perfect PG-13 movie, but alas, it didn't exist yet.
Nope.
They're like, yeah, this is a PG movie. Parental guidance suggested.
Well, it was literally, I think, within this year or the year after. Like, it was in the running. So, you know?
Yeah. Anyway.
It happens.
So, Carpenter locked out the press during the production of Christine, didn't talk to them after filming was wrapped up, and didn't screen the movie for critics. He was just, like, so burned after
the fucking thing. Traumatized.
He was like, fuck you, especially fuck you, and fuck you. he wanted the film to stand on its own rather than deal with the press who had torn him apart after the failure of The Thing.
And this goes to show how shitty the press is. They couldn't wait to, like, bring him down.
Oh, yeah.
They could not.
Sharks in the fucking water, man. Like, they just smelt chum, and they were just like, oh, John Carpenter's back, and he's doing another horror film. Let's see what we can do about this one. This was pretty unnecessary, though, as critics seemed to like the movie despite it not being his best work. Carpenter happened to think it was his worst.
Yeah, to this day.
Wow.
To this day, yeah.
Interesting. Our boy Roger Ebert gave it 3 out of 4 stars, saying, quote, Christine is, of course, utterly ridiculous, but I enjoyed it anyway.
Our succinct boy. He always knows how to wrap it up.
Just one, yeah. Audiences seem to enjoy it as well, giving Carpenter the hit he needed as the film made back more than twice its budget at $21 million.
That's pretty good.
Unfortunately, most of the cars used in the film were scrapped, with only a few being saved. One from a junkyard and another that was auctioned off as recently as 2020.
Yeah, I don't remember the actual number, but I think it went for quite a bit.
Oh, I bet. I want the Christine car. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Actually, I didn't include this in here, but wait, did I include it in here? No. Carpenter, actually, one of the most recent things he actually shot and directed himself was a music video with the soundtrack of Christine, and he used one of these cars in the music video, and he was in the music video. So it does have, I think, an attachment for him, but I think he's still, because it is the movie that pretty much saved his career.
I was going to say, this movie saved him, even if he's not proud of it. Like, I mean,
exactly.
It's that idea where it's like, okay, well, I'll do this job. It's not going to, like, it's not my passion, but I'll do it, and mm-hmm. it's going to pay the bills. And it's what brought him to whatever he did next that I'm sure made him feel more fulfilled.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things, too. You're right, exactly. It was exactly what he needed to do. Plus, he probably really liked his musical work on the film and the car. So why not just honor both?
Yeah.
Like, really. Yeah.
Especially considering in 1982, he did Season of the Witch, which I keep bringing up. But I do want to point out that people were not happy with him after Halloween 3 came out either.
No, that and The Thing, like, it's just a string of just people are like, what the fuck, Carpenter? He's like, I just wanted to make movies.
What were you thinking? Stay in line, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I just want to be creative. I killed Anthony.
I like that. It's a good, stay in line, bitch. Like, Wes Craven's the Freddy guy.
He has knife fingers. What are you talking about?
Where's your knife finger guy? Come on.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Here's a killer car. Here's a killer car.
Don't hate me. Don't hate me. Okay, so how does this King and Carpenter hybrid play out with modern audiences? Thankfully, we have the answer because of Letterboxd.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, here it is.
Christine has a 3.4 rating with 8,200 8.2 thousand reviews, possibly also counting as a moderate hit.
Mm-hmm.
Our favorite phrase. Patrick Williams gives the film a 3.5 stars, saying, quote, I respect this movie's commitment to trying to make the insult shitter happen, unquote.
It's a lovely insult. It's used twice in this film. It's great.
Actually, I think it's used 3 times.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Maybe 3 or 4 times. Like, it's used in the beginning, and I, like, once, and I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, is this just, like, an in-between? Like, I thought it was just something they used in between the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was something, like, I didn't think it was, like, stop trying to make shitter happen. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, they tried.
They tried. And God bless him for trying.
Anyway. I'll use it on Saturday. Don't worry. That's a
shitter.
Back off, shitter.
Oh boy. You sound that aggressive with your friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Emma Stefanski doesn't award the film any stars, but says instead, quote, I think Christine and I would be friends.
We're both aggressive bitches.
We're both huge cunts. Will Sloan gives the film 4 stars, saying, quote, "At last, a strong female character."
Oh well.
Although, Christine does not pass the Bechdel test.
What's the Bechdel test for the rest of us here? Never heard that before.
It's a joke. But I will explain it. In feminist theory, and I guess it's used as a litmus test against a lot of films. If two female characters have to have a conversation in a film, and it can't be about a man, it's the Bechdel test.
Oh, okay.
So technically this film doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
No, it does not. I think the only other female character only has lines about Christine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And the two female characters, if you want to count Christine the car as a female character, that when they interact, it's about fucking the dweeb McGee over here.
Eventually, he's fucking Suavecito Dweeb McGee over there.
But
fucking.
Even then, I'm like, you are so. Oh my god. Anyway, it's ridiculous. But so for anyone listening at home, yeah, that's what it is. If you want to really impress your feminist Hinge date, just talk about the Bechdel test.
I love how you feminist Hinge date, because that kind of dialogue does not come from a Bumble or a Tinder. I'll tell you what.
No, it doesn't. Anyway, and finally, Jamel Bouye praises the film. You gave me some tongue twisters on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Praises the film with 3.5 stars, concluding, quote, "Surprisingly layered for a film about a killer car, it can be read as an indictment of consumer society and car culture. It can be read as a sly subversion of nostalgia porn like Grease and American Graffiti, and it can be read as a blistering critique of toxic masculinity, of the ways in which the natural desire to grow into yourself as a man can warp and curdle into something destructive and ultimately fatal to yourself and others. Or, you know, you can just watch it as a film about a killer car, whatever works for you," unquote. I love that.
Right?
Oh my god.
That's what I wanted you to read. I'm just like, this is the Letterboxd review I have to conclude with right there. That's actually a really good
one. That's how I watch every movie ever. I go into like this like weird like echo chamber of every freaking like class I took in college about
all this
shit.
That's the
fairy brain. And then I'm like, or it could just be about a car.
Or the killer's drill mechanism, it's just a dick metaphor. It's just a dick metaphor.
It's just a dick metaphor.
That's it. See our Slumber Party Massacre episode for more on that one.
It's
such a good movie.
God, it's a drill cock. It's amazing. Anyway, Carpenter would get another chance in Hollywood, following up Christine with 1984's Starman, which would flop. He would unfortunately follow it up with another flop, Big Trouble in Little China, which is funny because it did also become a cult classic.
Yes.
But alas, horror would save the day for Carpenter. We'll talk about that when we cover either Prince of Darkness or They Live. For now, we have a killer car movie to dissect.
Oh, man. Because, yeah, we're not covering the other two, but, Carpenter still has a couple more in his bag that we definitely got to get to.
Carpenter did a Vampires movie, right?
And John Carpenter's Vampires. Yes. And I believe he also did Ghost of Mars. So those are the two other horror movies that would count.
And then They Live.
They Live, definitely. And then, of course, Prince of Darkness is a horror movie, too. I don't really hear much about it, though, to be honest with you. But, I mean, if fans like it, let us shoot us a DM and say, like, hey, cover Prince of Darkness, you pieces of shit, because we might.
Yeah, Anthony's really easily influenced by a listener, I guess, opinion.
Listen, Alex, that's completely off base, all right? I'm easily influenced by everything. when I see commercials, I'm like, yeah, give me the fucking cheesy bacon double cheeseburger. I will run right now. I will get it, and I'll regret it immediately, but, I'll do it.
I'll take a bite and immediately just wish I was dead.
They got my $8 already by just presenting it to me. So, listeners, you can do this as well.
How did the marketing guy become so easily sold?
That's how I know how to market. I'm like, yeah, okay, this is what gets the suckers. Oh my God. This is how you do it.
You schmuck.
Schmuck, there you go. That's a good way. See? So someone else works in marketing. So.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Meanwhile, every single person who calls me to try to sell me something, I'm just like, go fuck yourself, click.
I'm like, tell me more. But you know what? With that, we do have – I really wanted to do this play-by-play because it's an absurd, ridiculous fucking movie that we totally have to talk
it's
about because
– so good.
Just heads up, I love it. I actually really love it. Listeners, if you haven't seen Christine, watch it.
Yeah.
I say watch it. Just watch it.
Before we jump into it, do yourself a favor. Just watch it. It's like – I mean, it's like 2 hours.
No. Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was less, because to me it felt so fast.
Yeah, I know. It feels fast. It is 110 minutes, so yeah.
Oh, it's right under 2 hours. Holy shit.
It's under 2 hours, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a fast movie, but like there's something always happening.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. And if you want to see the fastest, like, I'm a little dweeb, turned into, like, I'm suave. Like, it's so fun. Anyway, we're going to jump right into it. But before we do, pause, go watch the movie. We haven't done this in a while.
Mm-hmm. Just there you go.
And welcome back. Aren't you glad you watched that movie?
Wow. Now let's talk about it. Let's do it.
Let's just go through the movie.
Yay! I gotcha. Let's do it. All right. We start at an assembly plant in 1957 Detroit, back when it was good old job creator back in the day. So,
Detroit.
Oh, and fresh off the line is a red and white Plymouth Fury, which proceeds to crush the hand of a frontline worker. One of his bros then gets behind the wheel and fatefully lets the ash from his cigar fall into the front seat like a jackass, just
classic,
like a fucking idiot.
Rookie mistake.
I love how Christine totally, like, this car already stands apart from the rest of the cars in the assembly line. So you know, like, oh, okay, this is something different.
You know what? And I know we're not going to get, like, the Christine cinematic universe or anything, but, like, how did she gain her autonomy? How did she gain, like, how did she become aware? Like,
Haunted paint.
Is that really it?
No, I have no idea. Oh. I just threw that out there. I'm like, haunted paints. Some voodoo King, fucking paints.
I don't know. Stephen King, when did he write this? Was he in his, like, cocaine craze?
He absolutely was. He doesn't remember, I don't think, writing this one in Cujo.
He doesn't remember writing it?
Yeah, there's a couple he doesn't remember writing.
Oh my
but
God.
I'm pretty sure this was up there. But I'm sure he was just like, so yeah, like a voodoo priest just like died in this like paint thing. And like they used the paint with the blood of the voodoo thing.
I'm sure if I read the book, it would like very clearly spell out like what happened.
Oh, there are definitely some book differences. But I don't remember them actually talking about the origin from when I looked up the differences. It's more like benign kind of little shit. Except one major thing, which I'm going to talk about actually.
All right.
Yeah, well, we got stuff.
and then
one more note. I love how this movie starts with no music. It's just car revving.
It's very, yes. Hold on. When did he write this? I need to.
No, it was around the time it released, like just a little bit before.
Yeah,
because remember, it was a manuscript. It wasn't a full novel.
Yeah, he wrote it the same year as Pet Sematary, and if I do recall, it was like right at the end of his cocaine, or like in the grips of his cocaine phase.
Yes, when it was at its fucking worst. So listen to our
Cocaine Steve, man, haunted car. Anyway, yeah, I'm just curious about the origin story. Anyway, so when the shift ends, the line supervisor hears 50s tunes coming from that red car.
Oh, boy.
And discovers, instead of some sick tunes, a fresh corpse.
Now, Alex, there were sick tunes also still rolling, okay, so alongside the corpse.
You get both. So
You get both.
It's like Sour Patch Kids. It's sour, and then it's sweet. That's
okay. I like that. That was good. Okay, so we skip ahead to the year Halloween release, good old 1978, where we meet Arnold Arnie Cunningham, insecure.
Arnold.
Annery. Annie.
God damn it. Don't make fun of Anakin.
I know we can't. I can't not bring Star Wars, but anyways,
not on this podcast, not right. To me, because then I have to get defensive, and then it turns into a whole thing. You know and how I get,
Master Skywalker. There's so many red Plymouths. What do we do?
Oh I boy! The Plymouths, the Chevys too.
The Belvederes and oh boy,
the so
we just have to bring child death in some way or another. Oh, anyways, and for more on that, just listen to our entire second season, because Jesus. So, an insecure, nerdy fellow with a very overbearing parents. That's our Arnie right there, yeah. And of course, his only friend is star high school football player Dennis Gilder, who is prodding his friend to consider asking out a lady.
Okay, I just love in high school, like, the obsession with friends getting their friends laid in movies.
Oh my god, that, yeah, you know what, I was fucking Arnie in high school for sure. Like, I
like that obsession, like, it's like, okay dude, we're seniors, like, we gotta, like, get you laid.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh
no,
oh my god.
I was like, nah, but I like my GameCube, like, she wouldn't like me. I remember there's definitely, like, nerds,
dude, oh my god, yes, please go. I just remember
nerds.
High school,
yeah. listen nerds, you're not always as bad as you think you are, okay? I've definitely, unfortunately, turned down advances without knowing I turned down advances.
Me too.
For so long.
Say that. In high school, like, I look back at photos from when I was in high school. I was like, dude, you were a fucking smoke show. You were just a quiet fucking nerd. And, like, okay, so this is the dorky part of, like, me in high school. I was really good. Like, I was a really good student.
Yeah.
And so I, like, would tutor people, and I ended up tutoring a bunch of people on the football team, so they all liked me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, long story short, is I ended up getting, like, asked out or, like, hit on, and looking back, I'm like, oh, that's what that was. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, you stupid bitch. You dude. Stupid bitch.
Same shit right here. I didn't realize it, but, you know, I mean, obviously I was still a fucking nerd, right. But, like, never as much as I thought.
No, like,
I was
like a geek. Like, you were a nerd in the sense that, like, you liked all that nerdy shit. Like, I was a geek. Like, I liked school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. I was friends with the Burnouts, who I'm friends with to this day. They're lovely people.
I mean, they're
fucking horrible.
I'm friends with the same people I was friends with in high school, too. But, yeah. Like, I was such a dork, but I was so caught up in my own head, and I assumed no one liked me.
Caught up in your head.
For whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And looking back, I'm like, what the fuck? Anyway, so the two have an incident with a trio of bullies who refer to Arnie as Cuntingham. Very creative. Dennis is there to save the day. But as things escalate very badly in shop class, but things escalate very badly in shop class when the lead bully pulls a knife on Arnie's best bud. They are, you know, saved by a surprisingly authoritative shop teacher. The lead bully is subsequently expelled.
I love it. He's pushing it. He's pushing it for sure. And the teacher's just like, dude, I'll call the cops. Like, what are you fucking doing?
I know. I think that's actually a line. He's just like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Like, who cares, bro? Like,
although this is one of the first moments, and it's a bunch of high schoolers, and I'm like, none of you are under 30.
No, they look old.
No, they're the, like, it's like Grease, where I'm like, there's no way in hell. Excuse me. There's no way in hell any of you are 17 years old.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Oh, it's bad.
It's very bad.
Anyways, as the duo drives home, Arnie with broken glasses and Dennis having just had his crotch grabbed by a henchman.
Yeah, that was weird.
They spot an old rust bucket, and of course, Arnie is oddly drawn to this.
Great.
Yeah. Catalyst time. Good.
What could go wrong? The duo stop, and Arnie buys the car despite Dennis's protests. He's not the best negotiator and pays $250 for the 57 Plymouth Fury named Christine, which was purchased off the assembly line by the owner's recently deceased brother? Question mark?
A lot of stuff piling up over here.
Yeah.
Yep. So with this, Arnie's parents are really pissed. They are really pissed when they actually learn that his purchase decision buying Christine. And of course, they refuse to let him keep the car on their property. But Arnie does not budge, and he actually storms off to find a home for his newly purchased vehicle.
I love that this is, again, like, just 80s, like, parent, like, strict parents. Like, my parents would have, like, I don't know, been not that kind. It would have just been like, he's just being a teenager blowing off steam if I was like, screw you guys, I'm out of car! You guys never let me do anything! Like, oh my god, like, heads would have rolled.
I mean, clearly his parents are, like, oppressive as people, though.
So. Oh, yeah, totally. Where it was... yeah, no, it would not have happened. Also, who tries to play fellatio in a game of Scrabble with your parents? Like, I probably would, but, I mean, now, because I'm an adult and I moved out, my mom probably would find it hilarious.
Oh, my dad would love that. We used to play Scrabble since I was, like, in, like, 7th grade.
Yeah.
Or 6th grade, actually. Yeah, like, really early on.
I grew up playing Scrabble.
Yes.
My grandma loved Scrabble, so. Mm-hmm. It was one of, like, the first games I learned how to play, along with Jin. So, okay, he manages to find a do-it-yourself junkyard / garage to park the vehicle in for a monthly fee. The rules are kind of strict, but Arnie is committed to keeping Christine.
I mean, he's like on a tear. He's like obsessed at this point now.
And it only gets worse.
Our nerd lead begins to dress more like a greaser, develops a far more arrogant attitude, a lot of confidence here, and maintains his newly found disrespectful attitude toward his parents, even skipping on commitments.
It's overnight. It's insane.
It's really overnight. It's like insanely goddamn fast.
Yeah. Like, normally it's like a slow burn, but in this one, it is like a light switch. Like, he's just like, okay, I'm a piece of shit now. Arnie's mom informs Dennis that Christine's former car owner committed suicide inside the car, prompting our football hero to confront the old guy who sold Christine to Arnie.
Yeah, you know, I like that Dennis here, our bro, has always been kind of suspicious about the scenario, but he's like, dude, what the fuck, man? Like, dude, this is, like, really bad.
Yeah, this is really weird.
Yeah. But, of course, the old man reveals that his brother's wife and daughter all died in this car. At separate times, of course. And that he tried to get rid of it, but the car returned 3 weeks later. So it's a pretty anomalous situation.
The car came back the very next day.
Just honk. Honk, honk. Hey, bitch.
Oh, man. Yeah. Arnie is improving so much with the car that his mechanical skills gain recognition with the junkyard owner, Darnell, who offers him a job. He's like, hey, hey, kid, you want a job? Like, it's very weird. Kind of scummy. Yeah.
Yeah, see, and this is kind of the cool thing, too. I like that. I mean, let's talk about Darnell here, because Darnell's I think he's actually a really fun character.
He's fun, yes.
Right? He's totally just like, shut the fuck up. Like, I'm the boss, blah, 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 blah. But then, like, you see him slowly kind of be like, you know, you're doing okay. Maybe if you do, you know, if you clean up or whatever it is, I'll let you get some scraps. Like, he's inching towards him.
Exactly. And then he's doing Arnie a favor, right? He's, like, trying to help him out. Mm-hmm. And then Arnie is just like, I'll think about it. And then Darnell, like, kind of takes offense to it. He's just like, don't think about it too long. And I'm like, good. Stay on the ground.
Yeah, because, like, geez, bitch, I'm not nice all the time. Fuck you. Anyways, during a football game, Dennis notices Arnie, his new girlfriend, Lee Cabot, and a very new-looking Christine. This distraction results in a major hit, which ends Dennis's football career. Poor dude is hospitalized as Arnie remains obsessed with this new red-ass car.
Yeah. So, cut to a drive-in date, like we talked about earlier. Lee reveals she doesn't actually like Christine while she's inside the car making out with Arnie. As soon as he steps out, Christine locks Lee in the car and makes her choke. Arnie attempts to save her, but ultimately a complete stranger does, prompting Arnie to react in jealousy. He does his best to mend the situation on the ride home, and does okay.
It's such a like weird scene. Like it's I don't know. I like the aesthetic choice of like the light is what kind of causes things, and that becomes kind of a theme throughout the rest of the film.
Yeah.
But like I don't know. Maybe I just don't like Lee as a character. She's just kind of thrown in there like, oh, here's a bunch of like dialogue and stuff now that you never had for the whole opening of this film. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Now they like love each other? What the fuck happened here?
Well, we don't see any of their relationship kind of coming to fruition, right? It just kind of jumps right into the middle. And I feel like that can be kind of jarring because she's just like, we never spend any time together. You're always just talking about Christine. And I'm like, we didn't see any of that. So it kind of makes her seem like a crazy bitch.
And maybe chew your food before fucking finishing. How about that shit?
Yeah. So the whole thing's really weird, and then it's just like, what are you gonna do? Like, you just stormed off into the rain. Like, what did you expect to happen? I don't know. The whole thing is just, it's very dramatic. And then, yeah, no. Anyway.
The bullies, led by, which we didn't name earlier, Buddy Repperton, takes this opportunity to vandalize the hell out of Christine overnight, causing Arnie to lose it when he discovers the damage the following day. He calls his girlfriend, of course, a shitter, as she attempts to console him. After attempting, of course, to repair Christine, Arnie becomes entranced as he discovers that she can indeed repair herself and has a mind of her own.
That's right. He does call her a shitter.
Yes. God. Yes, he does. He calls her a shitter.
You're like, yes.
Because she's a goddamn shitter. Could you believe? No. I do like this, though. Because, well, first, I think the vandalization scene is actually pure Carpenter. It's done really, really well.
Yeah.
But also, when he discovers Christine, he's like, show me. And then the music scene? Fucking
yes.
kicks. Oh. Oh, that's some badass shit.
Well, also, that scene, I kept having some very humorous thoughts as I was watching this. I'm like, and this is when I knew you were in love with your car.
Yes.
I'm like, and I also, another funny thought, I was like, I don't remember this in Titane.
oh, I haven't seen Titane, but okay.
But, yeah, you really shouldn't. But for anyone who has, you catch my drift. That whole scene, I was just like, interesting. Love it, but interesting. Let's see. So Christine goes on a killing spree, starting with one of the bullies named Moochie. He corners the curly-haired tough guy in a narrow...
Oh, she. My bad.
I'm sorry. We can't misgender the car.
Nah. Not dynaming this goddamn car, dude. No, I was a Christian before this.
So she corners the curly-haired tough guy in a narrow alleyway and proceeds to crush him.
Which, again, I love this scene. It looks good. Like, this shit looks fucking good. Because Christine just being, like, just not giving a fuck and going through this narrow alleyway and, like, losing parts of, like, the body. It's very good special effects. It's
Absolutely.
Really well done.
Yeah.
So Christine then makes her way to Buddy and the two remaining henchmen, killing the latter two, of course, by triggering a gas station explosion. The then on fire Christine runs down Buddy as he attempts to flee.
A cool shot.
It is. It's badass, and it's a lot of quick kills in succession. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah. So junkyard owner Darnell catches a nearly totaled Christine driving herself back to her unit. He inspects the car to make sure, only to be crushed to death by her seat, of course, to 50s tunes.
Yay! Keep on knocking, Mr.
Darnell's dead body is discovered the next morning inside a newly repaired Christine.
Oh, Darnell. I really like this character, actually.
I was really bummed when he died. I think this is a fun realization to make because in the beginning, you're not sure whether or not Arnie is in the car or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, like, she pulls into the parking lot or whatever, and he's just like, hey, Arnie's out running that errand for me. Which, by the way, does make it sound like he's vaguely involved in illegal activity. And they're just like, oh yeah, he's right here. And obviously the car just pulled up. He's just like, interesting. And obviously this whole thing happens. then you as the viewer, you're just like, oh shit, she's driving herself.
Yeah.
it was a cool moment.
No, I agree. And again, I did a way for a very compelling character, I'd say, to go. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like bad, kind of a bad person, but maybe also good. Like, it's weird. Off-putting good person.
I was going to say bad person, good character.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But of course, this gets the attention of the state police detective, Rudolph Junkins.
Oh, what a character name. Holy shit.
Who starts suspecting Arnie of foul play, despite his pretty concrete alibi. So Christine's paint in particular was found at the scene of the crime where the bullies met their demise. But again, Arnie does manage to dodge this accusation, if only barely.
He's just dodging left and right.
He's like, I wasn't there, bro. Figure it out.
He is so cocky with this fucking police officer. I was like, oh my. It's that
greaser attitude. Like, what, pig? What you gonna do?
I'm just like, you're such a dweeb.
He's a total fucking dweeb. It's great.
He's such a dweeb. Anyway, Lee has had enough by this point and breaks up with Arnie, as she should have. She then consults an equally concerned Dennis, as they both deduce that Christine is indeed alive and that she must be destroyed in order to get the old Arnie back.
Man. Yeah. I mean, this is just basically the last exposition you get before finale time.
Finale time.
Right? Because the duo, of course, return to Darnell's garage, disrupting the crime scene to devise a plan to destroy Christine with a bulldozer and a well-timed door closing. This is actually futile, though, as Christine was there the entire time under garbage. Yeah, it's a weird setup, but fine.
It's a weird setup, but it's really, really, like, satisfying when you realize, like, it's just like, you think you're locked in here with me, but I'm locked in here with you, or whatever.
Yeah, yes, keep detailing your plans. Just keep all the details.
It's so stupid, but it's so funny. She is being driven by a possessed Arnie, and they attempt to run down Lee, but end up crashing into... Darnell's office. Arnie is thrown through the windshield and gets impaled by a shard of glass. Christine plays 50s tunes as he dies in the arms of our heroes. This is lamest fucking death. Okay?
It's dramatic.
No, it has like no gravitas.
No. It's dramatic for the sake of attempting to be dramatic. It's not actually...
It's not dramatic. It has no gravitas. Like, he gets thrown through the windshield. He pulls out this shard of glass. Like, there's no, dying. Like he just, reaches up and touches, the grill of her car, and, just keels over. Like, there's nothing. I don't know. It felt so lackluster to me.
Correction. It's melodramatic.
Oh, yeah.
It is melodramatic. It's like, here's all the stuff happening. Like, did we earn that?
It's melodramatic. It did not feel earned. That death did not feel earned whatsoever. I was just like, is this happening? Is this really happening right now? Like, I kept expecting him to pop up 2 minutes later and be like, ha ha! Whatever. And it never fucking happened. I was so, it was disappointing for me, to say the least. But
I thought it was hilarious. Anyways, Dennis and Lee get their shit together and pound the hell out of Christine with the bulldozer, of course, though it initially proves futile as this bitch repairs quickly. However, eventually they are able to overpower her and then run over her remains repeatedly, far more quickly than she can actually regenerate. So this is an interesting example of perseverance.
What are the rules of her car magic, guys? Like, what's the deal? Like, can she only regenerate so much in a 24-hour period? Or like, what?
Like, if you start turning her parts into powder, is it like, we can't actually create mass anymore? So this is like, actually not great.
Launch her into space. What's the deal? So the following day, Dennis, Lee, and Detective Junkins watch Christine get crushed into a cube, and the duo are commended for their efforts by the detective. As the camera focuses on the remains, part of her front grill twitches. Cue, bed to the bone.
Well, cr- credits time, because that is Christine for you guys. It was a ride, I would say. Definitely a ride.
Like, I feel like the play-by-play did not do the movie justice. Like, such a wild ride.
It was one of the harder ones to write, because I'm like, I want to talk about it easy. And I went through and I'm like, I can't match this absurdity. There's no way.
It is absurd.
It's absurd, but, like, again, I will talk about our thoughts on Christine right now. I'm going to say loved it, entertaining. You can tell by the play-by-play. Like, it's a fun, weird, funky movie. It's just a kind of its own thing. When you mix Carpenter and King and you get shit like this, it's not like prestigious King either. This is like schlocky cocaine King.
You get like schlocky cocaine sting. Jesus Christ. Different. Very different. So different.
Every step you...
Every move you...
we belong to me. Oh, boy.
Roxanne. Anyway. Sorry.
Oh, that's great.
You have schlocky, cocained out King, and you have like bottom of the barrel, end of his rope, John Carpenter.
Yes, you do.
And you have this clusterfuck. It's amazing.
I love it. It's weird because it is a mess, but it's a mess made by an auteur who is just good. Like that scene where he's like, "Show me." Cinematically, with the soundtrack and everything, I'm like, dude, that is some, like, that's fucking cinema right there. Like, that is good.
Okay, relax, Phil.
I know, but it is. Relax. It's like really good. So that's what I was like.
It's like really good.
It's like really good. I don't know. That's not to say this is a perfect movie or even great in any means. It's like, it is a flawed picture. There's a lot of jumping around.
There's a lot of jumping around. Like, and I feel like talking to you about it kind of made me appreciate it more, because I enjoyed it. It was fun. Mm-hmm. It was also, I will say, as we've talked about so many times on this fucking podcast, I have the attention span of a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so surprised by I was like, oh my God, this is a 2-hour movie?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. And it went by very fast.
Like nothing.
Yeah.
It went by so fast. It's really well paced.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of janky because of that, but yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. Because, I mean, really, what's not to like? It's a Stephen King adaptation, John Carpenter. It's very fun. I do like the decision to not... or to kind of cast relative unknowns. I thought that was neat.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense because it doesn't... You don't have a focus on, a particular star. They're just characters. They're just characters. Yeah, and they match their character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. No, the casting was very good for this.
Mm-hmm. You need that, stilted cheesiness to do this kind of movie. And I think Carpenter understands that, honestly.
Yes.
He totally does. So, would you say this is actually more of a Stephen King movie, or is it more of a John Carpenter movie? What is it?
I would say heavy 40-60 Stephen King, John Carpenter.
Oh, that's a good way of putting it. I was close to 50-50, honestly, but I didn't quite know which way to go. I would say you're right, because it has a lot of King-y elements. I mean, it's a King story.
It's a King story.
You can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can definitely tell. It's just so well serviced by it being directed by John Carpenter. It really is. You can tell an auteur did this.
I'm not recalling right now, but there's been times... Well, actually, no. The Dead Zone, where, mm-hmm. I feel like David Cronenberg, amazing director. I love so much of his shit. He was not the right director choice for The Dead Zone.
Yeah, this, I mean, it creates unique, but yeah.
Exactly. This was the right Stephen King screenplay with the right director. This is happens.
Who, yeah.
Like, when you when you pick the right director for the right story, right?
Who else could do it? Who else could make this movie? Not one other person. Hell no. So this, I mean, I would say you're right. 60-40. Or what was it? Yeah, 60-40? What did you say?
It was 40 King, 60 Carpenter.
Oh, I thought it was the reverse. I think it's a little more King.
Oh,
a little more King. A little more King, despite it being very auteur.
I think it's more Carpenter.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think between the music and the way it was shot, and just I feel like I got the story at its essence, at its core, yes, is a Stephen King story, and I feel mm-hmm. like some of the ridiculousness is definitely lended from Stephen King, especially like just because the premise is kind of like a weird concept. But everything else, like story aside, I was getting a little, because I was thinking about that as I was watching it, whether or not I was getting more King or Carpenter like tones. I would say I was getting more Carpenter tones.
I mean,
definitely not the thing. I'll tell you that much. It's not the thing.
It's not the thing. Man, that's, you know, it's so hard to say because honest, my initial thing was 50-50. but I still think it's a little more Kingy just because the King beats are all there with the 50s, with the kind of high school thing parlaying between everybody. And like, there's enough, like the bass is so hard King. Like Carpenter is the, kind of like the layer in which this is presented.
Yeah. And we'll have to put a poll up and see what people think.
We have to see. You're right. Because it's a tough one. But it really is like down the middle, though. It's very tough to determine. But do you think the decision to cast no-name actors was a... I mean, we talked... It was a good one? Or, you know, I think we both think it's good. But what other 80s actor do you think would work in this particular film?
Oh, no. Okay, hold on. You got to hear me type for a second. 80s actors.
I already know mine. I will say it right now.
Okay, go.
John Cusack as Arnie.
Okay.
For sure. John Cusack as Arnie.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and say for Dennis, if he was a little taller, Emilio Estevez.
I was just about to say Emilio Estevez. God damn it.
Yeah, this is an Emilio Estevez kind of role. Kind of role.
Okay.
For the lady, Lee, give me Phoebe Cates.
Okay,
give me Phoebe Cates because she can really do some good stuff with that, I think. So Phoebe Cates, I think, would be a good one.
Leah Thompson.
Oh, Leah Thompson would kill it.
Leah Thompson.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I think
that's a goddamn good one. Okay, how about Arnie?
Oh, no. Okay, Arnie. Yeah.
I know. It's a tough one.
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm trying to think of like a good dorky-looking motherfucker from the 80s.
Anthony Michael Hall?
Yeah, but I mean, then we're just like doing the Breakfast Club.
that's a really good point. Yeah.
Hold on. Let's take a little look here. Let's see. I suppose if you wanted to dress him down, Matt Dillon.
Hey, okay. You can like really nerd out Matt Dillon and then turn him to a 50s greaser like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's actually not a bad one. I can see that for sure.
I think that would be a good option.
Okay. All right, Matt Dillon. You know, Kevin Bacon for Dennis actually wouldn't be that bad either, to be honest. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Bacon for Dennis. I can dig that, too.
Yeah.
Although I still think Estevez would be, like, the guy.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon would have been cool.
Mm-hmm. But John Cusack. I don't know. I think I can see him as Arnie like a motherfucker. Just something about him. It totally fits.
I agree. Yeah.
What would a 2022 version of Christine look like, and who would direct it?
Oh, jeez.
I know.
All of these questions. Do you have your answer?
Tesla would be the car. It would be a fucking Tesla. In terms of director, I really don't know. Because, I mean, this is... If you look at it, somebody with an auteur kind of, like, edge to him.
Sure.
It's not like a Robert Eggers or Ari Aster kind of thing.
No.
I'm thinking like a Blumhouse, Jordan Peele style direction with it, maybe.
See, I
like
think
really
Jordan
flip it on
Peele
its head.
Is too artsy.
I say he's artsy, but like I think he can do commercial pretty well.
Okay.
Or maybe his like artsy's kind of what sells right now. So I think maybe in this time it would kind of match. Because I mean Carpenter was artsy as fuck too, and he did this movie.
Okay, fair. You know what?
But Tesla for sure.
Tesla, okay. I want to see Guillermo del Toro's.
Oh, Del Toro's Christine?
Yeah, I want to see
That'd be good.
Del Toro's Christine.
I could dig it. I can dig that. That'd be
fun. That would be a fun one. And then what would a 2022 version look like? Well, I don't think it would be a Tesla because it would be too modern. So you'd have to think this came out in the 80s and it was a car from the 50s, right?
Yeah, so we got to go 20 years back.
Yeah, 20 or 30 years back. So a 90s car.
Ooh. It'll like overlap with the Fast and the Furious, so you know what? Supra, let's go. Give me Vin Diesel as fucking Dennis.
No.
Or as Arnie. No, as Arnie. No,
you know what's so funny? I kept thinking that Dennis looked like Paul Walker.
Oh, he kind of does. Ooh, he kind of does.
And you know what? From 1991, the most popular car in the 90s was the Honda Accord. So give me a haunted Honda Accord.
Oh, my. A haunted 91 Accord? Oh. Oh, that's not good. No. I'm just trying to get to the grocery store, bro. Oh, that's funny.
According to the internet, yeah.
Oh, although, that's hilarious.
You know, it'd be even better if it was like a DeLorean.
Yeah, if it was a little more 80s, if we did that. But
you could also do like a Thunderbird, just if you want to get like real like bottom of the barrel with it.
Oh, God, the Camaro, just like fucking Bumblebee.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought up Bumblebee, because as I was watching Christine, I was just like, okay, whoever came up with the premise of Bumblebee in the first Transformers movie, definitely watch Christine.
Yeah, that is a proto Bumblebee for sure.
Well, cause you know how he uses the radio to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just like, wow, that is, the parallels. It was just very funny to me. It was very amusing.
I had that thought the entire time as well, for sure.
Okay, I'm glad it wasn't just me. I'm sure anyone who watched Christine, who grew up in like the time that we grew up, would be like, oh, it's like Bumblebee.
Okay, so let's see here. So, fun time. Your car is suddenly sentient. Oh, it has a lot to say. Okay. She has a lot to say. What genre of music does your car prefer to express themselves in, and what are their major grievances?
I'm going to say yacht rock. Yacht rock, like dad rock. Because I'm just guessing. Hey. For those of you who don't know, I drive a 2007 Dodge Charger. so it's not either that or like late 90s, early 2000s, like metal.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's major grievances. I don't change her oil enough. She's just like, I'm dying over here, man.
Bitch, every 3,000 miles, what are you fucking doing?
I need to get Yasha an oil change so bad. And I keep pushing it off, and I'm like, I'll do it next time I get paid.
Oh, that poor girl. Well, I drive a 2013 Mazda 3. GT. And my girl, her name is Saria, after Saria from Zelda.
I didn't know that your car had a name.
Yeah, it was Saria.
No idea. Okay.
I never call her Saria, but she's Saria. Okay. So she definitely communicates via 90s rap and and Motown jams. So she's both.
That's because that's all you listen to.
It's like 70% of what I listen to, but it's a good portion. Her major grievance is like she is mad because I just take these potholes. I'm like, dude, it's LA streets. They're LA streets. I can't do anything about it. A fucking big rig made that happen the day before. But she's like, dude, just chill it on the fucking potholes, man. Like that's me. That's my car.
Okay, fair.
She's not liking it. But how would you say Christine fares against other King movies and, let's say, Carpenter movies? Where is Christine on both creators' catalogs?
Man.
Where does this movie kind of fare?
Honestly, once your motorcycle goes by. I would say a little bit further up on my tier list for King, a little bit lower on my list for Carpenter.
I'm with you on that one. I'm told, you know what, to me it's a middle Carpenter movie, but Carpenter's so goddamn good, it's hard to, middle's like not bad at all. Not even a little bit. King, on the other hand, okay.
To be fair, I don't think I've seen a whole lot of Carpenter movies.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of good and bad from him.
Yeah.
So I would say like it's what do you calculate both? The fact that it's so entertaining, I would say middle to around middle for me. You can go either way. But it's definitely not bad. And as for King movies, it's one of the more well made ones. It really is just well made. So yeah, that's where I land on it. It's definitely one of the better King movies, like for sure. He's got some shit.
I'm looking at Carpenter movies and I haven't seen a whole lot.
Well, we gotta fix that shit.
I mean, obviously, like, I've seen Halloween, duh. But, like, yeah. I haven't seen The Fog. I haven't seen Escape from New York. I haven't seen Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, just good ones.
I haven't, like, yeah.
Okay, well, we're gonna have to fix that, listeners, and then do a few more.
Totally
a few
fine. More Carpenter films. I'm open to changing. I'm open to changing. So
the next Carpenter movie is The Fog. Let's go. Which haven't done that one yet, but let's see. So, kill the film. Kill of the film.
Honestly, I think being run over while a car, like being chased by an on-fire car, mm-hmm. and ultimately being run over, that was good.
Yeah, that was a good one. I would say that too. And then I would also definitely say the alleyway. That something about that kill particular gets me.
You were very invested in that one. You keep bringing it up.
I know, it's like the third time, but the special effects, you can't do that anymore. No. They would CG that. Like, it's just not going to work, but these guys fucked up that car and made it work.
We actually killed a kid.
Yeah, they're like, yep, he had a twin. They were cool with it. We paid him a lot of money. It's okay.
It worked out.
Now, with that, Ms. Webster, what would you rate Christine out of 5 Rockin' 50s tunes?
I would rate it... I'm gonna give it a 4.
Hi. Hey. Okay. That's pretty good.
And not in like a like artsy... It's not like an Ari Aster 4.
No.
But it's a fun 4.
Like, it's like a super fun 4.
It's a fun 4. And you know what? I saw some people on Twitter talking shit about like being consistent about your criticisms and your ratings, but I personally, I'm doing this for fun. Who gives a shit? I'm giving it a fun 4.
I was going to go a little lower. I'm going to go 3.8.
Okay,
3.8.
That's so, yeah. Okay.
It's obscure, but I think it's not quite a 4, but okay. it is like the funnest 3. It's like the funnest threes.
Okay, because you're right. I can't give it a 3.5, and I didn't. You're right. A 4 feels a little bit too generous. 3.75. I don't know. Yeah, 3.8. Okay. Yeah, 3.8.
3.8, right? Because I feel like 3.75 is even undercutting it, like just by a smidge.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's just it's just good.
Yeah.
It's just good. It's not brilliant. It's not all this.
It's not particularly groundbreaking. I don't think any particular I don't think any tropes were particularly subverted. I think it was just like. It was good for what you got. It's enjoyable. It's fun. It's not even like, I would say if your kid is very, very cool with cursing or you're very cool about cursing around your kid, I think this is a great introductory horror film.
Yeah, I would think so too. Baby's first horror. Let it be. Baby's
first horror.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, 3.8. I think it's good.
Right? Yeah. I think so, too. Worth the watch. Absolutely worth the watch. All the flaws are just, like, filmmaking or, like, surface-level kind of stuff. It's nothing too... But, you know, it's obviously not groundbreaking either. Yeah. It just is popcorn delightfulness,
absolutely.
I would say.
Popcorn delightfulness. I agree. Okay. I think that's it for this week. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. That was Christine, directed by John Carpenter. From 1983. Thank you so much for listening. Next week, we are covering the weirdest Frankenstein story ever told. That's your hint. Take it for what it is, knowing that our theme is ladies.
This is ladies' night. Oh, what a night.
So stay tuned for that next week. Anthony has never seen nor heard of this film. I'm very excited.
Still ignorant.
I watched it once years ago. So this could be a total failure.
Those are always fun.
So I'm excited. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Please rate and subscribe wherever you are listening. Let's see. Spotify has a brand new rating system. So if you are listening on iTunes or on Spotify, please give us a 5-star rating. If you're listening on iTunes, you can also write us a review. That means the absolute world to us, and it does help other people find this podcast. And if you feel we deserve a couple bucks for what we're doing, you can find us on Patreon as well. We are at patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod, so you can check us out there.
That's right.
And if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE, People's Podcast. And you can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
That's me.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I'm sure I'll be tweeting rapidly about the Book of Boba Fett, which I just started by the time we're recording, but at this point it'll be ongoing.
Opinions will be aired.
Opinions will be aired. I'm just talking about all the dorky stuff that, you know, I love. So feel free to check us out on either of those platforms. Until next week, if you feel a sudden attraction to a car, call your therapist. Don't buy it.
Yes, and don't ever give nerds power. You see what happens.
Bye.
See ya.